And there was no willing myself out of this situation. I was either going to be paralyzed or I was not going to be paralyzed, and it depended upon what happened in surgery.
This podcast is about the time we all get knocked down in life and climb up a new person. Listen for free wherever you get your podcasts. Let me introduce you to Joby Manson. At the age of 24, Joby made a decision that would forever change the course of her life. An experienced surfer, she misjudged the location of a sandbar when she dove headfirst into the ocean, breaking her neck and spending the next moments face down in the ocean, paralyzed. Like a scene out of a movie, Joby survived and learned a valuable lesson, that she had to break her neck to reconnect with herself. This discovery led her to start a coaching practice called Sifari that takes place in the healing and centering powers of the ocean. Joby Manson, welcome to Belly of the Beast Life Stories.
Thank you so much for having me.
So take us back to that time in your life that drove you down into the belly.
Down into the belly. That would have really turned up the volume when I was about 24. I had been living in California for about 2 years at that time, and I had just landed my dream job. And about a month into that work experience, I was working with a company called Aviator Nation, and I was helping build out the brand, and we were building out a new retail store in Manhattan Beach, and it was July 3rd. We had been working really late, and we were actually being filmed for some vitamin water commercial content, something or other. And we were doing late nights. We were building the store ourselves. We were covered in paint and sawdust, and it was a bunch of cute surfer girls running around with hammers. And we all thought, oh, we're going to be working late. We're going to go down to the beach and just jump in the water. It was hot. I mean, it was middle of early July. And I was laughing to myself because I'm a surfer and I'm always in the ocean, and I tend to forget to bring a bathing suit, ironically. Like, I don't know how that happens, but that particular day I was wearing like jean cutoffs and I had a bikini top but no bottoms on. And so I was like, oh, I guess I'm not going in the ocean right now. I don't want to work the rest of the night in wet jeans. And I'll never forget this. I turned to one of my coworkers and I was like, oh, I'm going to just sit this one out. And she looks at me and she was like, Joby, you only live once. And as she said that, I ran and I dove headfirst into the ocean and nothing. I blacked out. My arms went above my head and I smashed into a sandbar. And I don't know how long I was blacked out. But I came to and I realized I couldn't feel anything beneath my neck. I was completely paralyzed and immobilized, and I was face down in the ocean. I was with a few other girls, a few other coworkers, but they weren't around me immediately, and it was just after sundown. It wasn't dark, but it was definitely sunset. And I have no idea how I flipped over. Nobody was around me. Nobody turned me over. I just remember being washed and water kept coming in and out of my mouth, and I was laying on the ground. And I now, 8 years later, I make this joke that Quentin Tarantino saved my life, because one of my favorite movies is Kill Bill. And in that movie, there's a scene where the main character is sitting in the back of a car and essentially willing her limbs to move by telling them over and over and over again, like, wiggle your big toe. And so as I lay there motionless in the ocean, my body was moving, but because of water, not from my own will. And I told myself that I had to get up. And I told myself that over and over and over again, until about probably, I imagine, 5, 6, 7 minutes later, I was able to stand and I couldn't hold my head up. I had to, like, it was cocked to the side, and I slowly got out, walked up to the lifeguard, and my right hand couldn't unclench. Like, I had a fist, and it's the most bizarre feeling in the world to have to to tell yourself to move and not have your body respond. And so my fist was clenched. I couldn't hold my head up. I was walking back up towards the lifeguard, and she came over to me and she was like, "Are you okay?" And I said, "No, I think I just did something really bad. I was paralyzed for a minute. I blacked out, and now I can't hold my head up straight." And so they very quickly and efficiently lay you down straight, put you on a stretcher, put you in an ambulance. And I remember being in the back of the ambulance, and I called my dad, and I was like, "Dad, I think I just did something really bad. I don't know what just happened, but I couldn't feel anything, and now I have my dexterity back, and I can move, but I'm really scared. Like, I don't know what I just did, but I know I did something bad." And I've always been a bit physically reckless, but this was by far a threshold I had yet to breach. And so he was like, "Oh, you know, football players do this. You probably have a stinger. You probably had, like, you jammed your neck. You didn't break your neck." And I got to the hospital. My coworkers had come with me, not in the ambulance, but met me at the hospital. And I was mortified. I was so embarrassed because everything that led up to that moment was me trying to prove myself, me trying to look like I can handle myself in the ocean. I can do anything. I'm strong. I'm a surfer. I'm so comfortable here. And God, I was so ashamed and couldn't even look at them. And one in particular was trying to make me laugh. And, you know, I learned later that if you move like a millimeter and you're in traction and you have even a slight threat of severing your spinal cord, like, it can happen that quickly. Thank God I wasn't moving around much, but they were making me laugh. And so even in making you laugh, like, that's a centimeter. And the doctor came over and he said, "You need to call your parents right now. You have 7 vertebrae in your neck and you crushed number 5, and you may in fact be paralyzed even though you can move now. So call your parents." And it was July 3rd, and so many of the doctors were occupied. I spent the next four days in what's called a halo, which was actually more painful than breaking your neck. It's when they drill, God, I don't even know what to call it, like pins in the sides of your temples, and then they weight you. They hang a weight over the back of your head to keep you stationary because you can't move. And my doctor he had no bedside manner, but bless this man. He was so wonderful, and he warmed up to me. I warmed up to him eventually, but he didn't really appreciate the fact that going into surgery, I was like, "Where did you go to medical school? Like, you're about to open up my neck." And he was like, "You're going to get a pre-cocktail." Turned on the, not amnesia, but whatever they do to knock you out quicker. He didn't care for my commentary. But yeah, so that was...
So can we go back a little bit?
Of course, of course.
So you're kind of walking on the beach with your head on your shoulder. What are you thinking at this point?
A million things. I'm thinking, what the fuck did I just do? This is bad. It hurts. My heart's beating so fast in my chest. It's actually beating that fast right now, even talking about it. And there's an overwhelming sense of, I am right here, right now. And it was such a humbling catapult into my body in a way that I think I had spent the first 24 years of my life running away from.
And can you explain? I mean, you spend a lot of time in the ocean, even now. So can you describe how that's even possible? That there was just like kind of like the sandbar all of a sudden that you didn't know was there.
I knew it was there. I just misjudged it. When I was diving in, I had my arms over my head and timed it wrong and hit the wave that I was diving into and under, hit my arms over my head, and then my face planted into cement, essentially, the ground, the sandbar. I thank God, not myself, I thank, you know, the powers that be, that it happened in this country. There have been many times in my life where I've been on beaches that are very remote, and I was extremely lucky to have that kind of accident happen when I was so close to the best possible medical care there could be, because at any other time in my life in Bali or in Mozambique or in the Philippines, that would not have been the case. I've been very blessed to surf in a lot of different parts of the world and dive in a lot of parts of the world. And 24 is very young. 32, I'm 32 now, is still very young. And I used to feel very invincible. I don't anymore at all. And there was something very special that happened that day. It was probably the most important moment in my life up until that point, but I imagine that'll be the most, if not one of the most pivotal moments of my path, my journey.
We'll get into that, but I would love to understand, I mean, you're kind of joking with your friends, and then all of a sudden your doctor comes in. I mean, you think it might be a stinger, is what your dad said it might be when you jam your neck. And then the doctor says, you might be paralyzed.
I've spent my life defining myself by my strength and very much my physical strength. I was an athlete in college. I've been an athlete since before I could walk. And this was the first time that strength wasn't going to get me through, that kind of strength. The paralyzing fear of what life could look like without movement was and is not acceptable to me, that I couldn't live that way. I'm sure I could. I wouldn't want to. And it really is, it is the scariest moment to live and come into awareness that that is a possibility, even though I felt at that time so far away from anything even close to that as part of my life, but that life could be that kind of prison. And I associate it as a prison because I live a very active life. I love life. I love being out in the world with the elements, with nature, with people. To have that taken away from me would be worse than death.
So they put the halo on, which you described as they drill into your skull and then lay you down and throw weight over the back of your head to keep it in place.
Yeah, I didn't see it. I think it's on like a fishing line. There's almost like a fish bobber weight that was hanging over this. Somehow they attached that contraption.
They don't want you moving your neck at all.
You can't, no. They call it traction. And some people, after they break their neck, they have to stay in stabilization like that, even beyond the surgery. I fortunately did not have to. Yeah, it's excruciating.
Do you remember the phone call, that second phone call to your parents?
Yeah, I was sobbing. I was sobbing and I was alone in a hospital bed. It was getting to be late at night, and I, for the first time in my life, didn't trust that things were going to be okay, didn't know if things were going to be okay, and felt so paralyzed. Both literally and metaphorically. I have a very powerful sense of will, and that has landed me in all kinds of situations, but it's always been something that I relied very heavily upon, that I would will something my way, and there was no willing myself out of this situation. I was either going to be paralyzed or I was not going to be paralyzed, and it depended upon what happened in surgery, and that was out of my hands. That was in the hands of the physician and everyone supporting him and chance.
Your family is on the East Coast?
My family is all on the East Coast, yes.
Did they immediately fly?
My dad did. My sisters were in Paris at the time. So my dad flew out overnight and came and slept in the windowsill of the hospital. And we waited. The accident happened on the 3rd, and I'm pretty sure I got surgery on the 5th of July. So spent a couple days in traction, not being able to move. You know, it was terrible because I literally rolled out of the ocean into a hospital bed. And so there was sand and salt and seaweed. Mm-hmm. Like, I can't even imagine. I could have probably conjured some kind of alchemical mixture in that hospital bed. I don't know what was going on. But
eating, bathroom, I mean, you can't move.
No, you can't move. Yeah. No, they hook you up to a catheter, and that's how you go to the bathroom. And then eating. Fuck. That would have been the last thing on my mind.
At this point, you've had a surgery, and this was July 5th. So it was a couple days after the accident, the most traumatic accident I think anyone can have. And you just had the surgery. You wake up. Are you sort of still very sore and everything, right? But are you feeling anything? Is it?
So when I woke up out of surgery, I had mobility. They kind of run tests on your feet. They touch your toes and they take like this instrument that's kind of pointy and they essentially test your sensitivity. And I had perfect sensitivity. Sensitivity has never been a problem in my life. It's a blessing and a curse. But I didn't have it in that moment. And I was in the ICU for about, I think, 3 to 4 days after. So at that point, I think for me, I'm a meticulous shower taker. I take probably 2 or 3 showers a day. I love the shower. And at that point, I think it had been a week since I had showered after surgery, plus ocean, plus sand, seaweed. Like that didn't go anywhere when I had surgery. Like they wipe you down, but like it's not ideal. So I was so looking forward to getting in the shower. But yeah, it was 3 to 4 days in the hospital. And then they send you home and you have to go home in a car. But as part of my recovery, couldn't drive in a car, couldn't drive a car for about, they say, 6 months. They sent me home with a really attractive neck brace that is more painful to wear than to not wear. And they sent me home, I'll never forget this, with this massive pill container of something called Dilaudid. I think that's the actual
name. Yeah, it's an opioid.
Uh-huh. And I took 2 of them when I got back to my house and I slept for 2 days. And I was like, wow, that felt amazing. Those are going in the trash.
Yeah.
So I got rid of those right away, which tells you a lot about me at 24. Good times. Really, it's quite a masochistic recovery. But
you know, on that point, how did you manage the pain?
Not well. I think I could have been so much more gentle with myself. And that's been a huge learning point since the accident, is cultivating a much softer approach to everything in life. But the healing of the actual pain and or recovery of my body, you're not allowed to drive. You're supposed to be bedridden for 3 months. You have a neck brace, no physical therapy of any kind. I, to this day, have not had any physical therapy to rehabilitate my neck. I wore that neck brace for about 10 days and said that was enough. And I was back at work, I think, 2.5 weeks later. You're smiling.
I mean, this is like against doctor's orders.
This is very against doctor's orders. Like I said, I was very cavalier in those days. But which you'd think that accident would have softened that. But really being sanctioned to a bed and being away from friends, having to still myself was not something I was willing to accept. And out of this accident, that's been a huge takeaway, is there's such a pivotal learning experience to rest and to stillness and to patience and softness. But that wasn't part of the recovery. The recovery was sans medication, sans neck brace. I waited about, I didn't drive and I didn't ride in a car for about, I listened to that. I did not want to get in an accident and re-break my neck. So I was living in Venice at the time and working in Venice. So that was really helpful. I could walk to work and walk on the beach in the morning. And that's what I did. I distracted myself into healing. And that was one way. That is not a way I would ever do again. That is not a way I would recommend to anybody else. But I chose to put my focus elsewhere other than on my pain. And that allowed me to, in many ways, transcend it.
And the first part you talked about feeling very ashamed. And I wonder, during your recovery, if that was still a part of it.
That was a part of it in the sense that I do not have one photograph of this accident happening. Pre-surgery, post-surgery, the time in the hospital, the time after the hospital. Like, I have absolutely no written record of this happening other than x-rays and a really, I used to joke, nice scar right at the center of my neck, but my surgeon was fantastic, so you can hardly see it. You can only see it when I turn my neck. But I was hiding that I had this accident. I was hiding it from friends. It wasn't, at the time, Instagram was like just starting, but it would have been something that I would imagine people would post on social network and just like ask for support. But that wasn't something I was open to at the time. I didn't want support. I didn't want anyone knowing I had been hurt, knowing that I had a very physical weakness. I didn't want sympathy. I didn't want empathy. This was a very, like I said, this experience was the catalyst to softening, but I was very, very, very tough in every sense of the word.
What about your family? How did they deal with this? Did they stay with you in Venice, for example, or did they have to go back?
My dad's a dentist and had patients, and so he stayed out in California, I think for a week total, including the time that I was in surgery. And then he came back out maybe 3 weeks later for a weekend. But no, my mom passed away a long time ago. My stepmom and I have gone through ups and downs of being close, and we weren't close at that time. And my siblings were much younger than me, and so there was no caretaking happening from family.
Did you feel like you experienced pretty much all of this alone?
Yeah, I think that's in many ways what led to the accident happening and then what I faced as a result of it occurring.
What do you mean, led to the accident happening?
I had spent, like, we're all alone, right? But I had a very lonely life, and it didn't look that way from the outside. My life looked amazing. I got to travel. I went to a wonderful college. I was incredibly educated. I had upper-class family. I had every opportunity in the world at my disposal, and I took many of them. And I had absolutely no idea how sad I was and how disconnected from myself I was. And I had to break my neck to reconnect to myself. But yeah, there was a lot of time that I had spent feeling very lonely and not even aware that I was sad. And the behavior, like if we look at the actual accident, what was happening in that moment, I ran and dove in the ocean, and I was reckless and fearless and tough and strong and proving myself. And really, I don't need to prove anything, but I sure felt like I did in that moment, in that first couple weeks at a new job, working with a bunch of really amazing young women, working for a woman who I was very inspired by and who I'd worked very hard to get hired at that job. There wasn't a job available, and I made myself a job. And I refused to accept failure, or what I thought failure was at that time. And so I think that feeling alone without understanding truly what that meant absolutely led to that accident. That moment, I don't believe it was an accident. I believe it was a homecoming. That was me being given the opportunity to live differently. And it was a second chance at a new kind of life. And it's been 8 years of cultivating that garden and creating new relationships, new behaviors, new perspectives and outlooks, and from the top down and the bottom up.
Do you ever touch that part of your neck?
Yeah. Yeah, I do. I don't touch really where the scar is, very rarely. I don't have as much of a phobia of it anymore, but I definitely am a bit like, if anyone tries to touch, like my partner were to touch my neck, she doesn't really do that. I kind of back up when that happens. But I tend to, my neck does get sore at times. I don't really sleep very well on it anymore. It's not terrible, but it's not ideal, but it's better than being quadriplegic.
You said something earlier about you had to break your neck to really reconnect with who you are and live a different life. Can you expound on that?
So if you look at the human body, we have our head, we have our neck, and we have our heart. I had to break my neck to understand that I needed to reconnect to my heart and allow my heart and my sense of feeling, but feeling in a different way. I think at that, up until that point, I would have said to you that I thought I was incredibly emotionally intelligent, but being able to speak about your feelings and know what they are versus allowing yourself to feel them are two very different experiences. And up until that time, I knew how to talk about my emotions. I knew how to outsmart anybody when it came to a certain level of intelligence from a feeling state. But I had absolutely no clue how to feel anything. And it's ironic, but you don't know you're numb until you experience pain. And then you recognize, oh, I'm in stasis most of the time. And so from that level of pain, I was woken up to the beginnings of learning how to feel again. And in coming home to myself in that way, I was able to cultivate a very different kind of strength. And I would say my relationship to that now is that strength is softness. Strength is vulnerability. Strength is trust. Strength is surrender. And that's what the ocean teaches me every day. You know, there's a beautiful quote by a man named Lao Tzu, who is, you know, the father of Taoism. And he said that water is the softest thing and the strongest thing. Water is the softest thing, and yet it penetrates mountains. And when I'm in the ocean, and when I'm needing to do nothing but breathe in order to float, I learn that. And I learn that over and over again, that strength is softness.
So when did you surrender in this experience?
I think I surrender every day with it. But you mean this?
With the accident. Like, do you remember a specific point? Like, you're sort of, oh God, I'm dirty, the seaweed, the sand, this is happening.
Well, I think I was forced into it, right? Like, it wasn't. And I think that many of us experience forced surrender. We only wake up to ourselves when we have no other choice, whether that's an accident, whether that's a loss, whether that it's usually a pivotal moment of deep pain. And that wakes us up to looking at something differently or being different in general.
Okay, so when did you feel fully recovered with like the neck injury?
2 years ago.
Wow.
Yeah. So about, it would have been 6 years later after the accident, almost to the year. I mean, almost to the exact date. I was in Hawaii and I was doing a work study program. I was working with this amazing woman who studies animal communication and works with dolphins. And I remember when I looked up the workshop initially, she was a psychologist who worked with animals and did energy work. And I was thinking it was going to be much more on the psychological spectrum of things, but this woman is definitely out there in the best way. I think this woman is a dolphin. I'm like pretty convinced she is a dolphin. Her name is Joan Ocean, and she is fantastic. And I was doing one of her workshops, and she said something so beautiful to us about the dolphins, which are, you know, if you don't know anything about dolphins, they're some of the most highly intelligent animals on the planet. They're where sonar came from. But she asked us, she said, if you have any sort of pain in your body, ask the dolphins to remove it. And I kind of like laughed at her and I was like, yeah, okay, whatever. She had said some pretty funny things over the week. And I was like, you know what? I've seen some pretty crazy things in my life and I don't have anything to lose. So within a meditation one morning before we went out to be with the dolphins, I asked, I said, dolphins, like I have had pretty severe pain in my neck on and off in different moments since this accident. And if you can help me out with that, I'd really appreciate it. And that afternoon...
Did you verbally say that?
No, I asked in meditation.
Okay.
So I was, I probably should have said it verbally out loud, but no, it was just in a psychological ask, in a focus, in an intention. And I focused my attention on that idea of what it would feel like to just be free again of pain and what life might be like from that space. And out in the water that day, I was like one of the youngest people on this retreat. Everybody was, upwards of 60 years old, and everyone's, cruising around in Hawaii. It's beautiful. It's August. The water there is clear for miles. And I got in the ocean and I was kind of doing my own thing. And where we were swimming, you can go and swim with essentially super pods of dolphins, which is hundreds of dolphins. And I was kind of floating out by myself. And all of a sudden, one dolphin comes over to me and like stares at me point blank in the face and sends a shockwave through my entire body. So they can sonar you. And I felt it hit my neck and I felt that vibration in my body. And then it goes out into every direction. And it's like, I've never talked about it. So I can't even, there aren't words for this experience in the best way, but you feel sound, you feel energy moving in waves throughout your body. It's like a jolt, and it leaves you a little dizzy, a little disoriented, a little bit lightheaded. I got back onto the boat, and the boat's not super helpful because the boat's rocking. It's not like you're on stable land. And I just like sat down, laid down for a minute, and you sit in the sun and you just kind of gather yourself. But I would say that the dolphins really helped me out with that recovery. I think that there was a certain threshold that I reached in my own acceptance and integration of what that experience was and is and will always be. And then I got by with a little help from my friends.
Joby, earlier you mentioned that this is the most important moment in your life, this accident. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, it taught me how to appreciate. It woke me up to life isn't something to be taken for granted. And, at that time, I wouldn't have actually been able to understand that I was, in fact, taking it for granted. I don't know that I would say I was or I wasn't, but it definitely gave me a depth of experience to understand what an incredible gift it is to be alive. And it opened me up to all kinds of skills and sensitivities and superpowers and beliefs about what's possible. I mean, I believe that we barely touch the surface of what we are capable of in the best and in the worst sense. And so much of that power lives in our mind and lives in our perception and lives in our beliefs and lives in how we see and therefore how we feel.
So if you can, take us back to sitting on the dock with your friend, sitting on the beach with your friend. And you've already made the decision that you're not going to go in the ocean that day, but your friend challenges you to YOLO. You only live once. What would you say now?
What would I say now? That is a very complicated question to answer. I would say that. And I would say life is so much more than what we think it is. And when we slow down the way we're living, when we slow down the way we think, when we stretch our experience of time, which is difficult when you live in a city, and it's difficult when you're an entrepreneur, and it's difficult in the way that our culture propels itself into the future and refuses to live in the present moment. But if you can do it, if you can make that choice to still yourself, life and the gift of it and the magic of it is so grand. And I feel so blessed to be here, to share time and space to get to live in this heaven. I mean, we really, I believe that we do live in heaven, and we can make it hell if we choose to in our minds, but we live on the most incredible planet. By far my favorite planet. I'm really stoked on Earth. And yeah, I think that it really is, it's all a gift. It's such a pleasure. And I say that about the moments and experiences that have been so beautiful and transformative and transportive in my life, and also moments of deep sadness and loss and pain, whether we're talking about being a product of multiple divorces or, you know, the loss of a parent. It's all a gift.
Before this interview, you were in the ocean?
Yeah. Yeah, I came from the ocean this morning.
So what role does the ocean play now?
The ocean is, it's my home, it's my family, it's where I go to be myself. It's where I have the best time being myself. It's where I play. It's where I work. It's where I love. I open my heart in the water.
Could you talk a little bit about that? Your work and how you open your heart?
My work. I work in the ocean. I am the creator of a practice that I call Sifari, which is part practice, part philosophy. And it consists of me helping people explore and access the greatest levels of their sense of power and creativity and expression. I take people out on a paddleboard and I teach them different meditation techniques, aspects of visualization and pattern tracing and shifting their mindset to move their minds so that they may enter their body differently. And water is my vehicle, and it's my medium, it's my muse, it's everything. It's where we all come from. Our bodies, we walk around the planet, are mostly water. And so when we submerge in that environment, we return home to the most natural aspect of ourselves.
Have you become the dolphin?
Maybe in this moment. Yeah. That's the goal. I mean, that's a life goal. If I could move through my life the way the dolphin moves it through the ocean, I would be definitely a Zen master, I think. I very much endeavor to be that graceful in my life and have that level of ease. If you've ever watched a dolphin, they barely move in the water. They take one flick of their tail and they fly.
Joby, thank you so much for sharing this story with us.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.